Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Kate Hennessy, and you are listening to Get Focused Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us inspire you and hopefully help you refocus when life gets in the way. Each week on Get Focused Radio, I'm going to try and bring you guests that have overcome challenges, guests who will inspire you, and guests who will share tools and techniques to help you create a more fulfilled and happy life. Please connect with me after the show at AskKateHennessy@GetFocusedRadio.com. We have a very special show planned for you today. Our guest today is Connie Bird, who is an executive coach, workshop presenter, and author. Today we're going to talk about her book, Life is Sales, and how to bring a bit more influence and power into our lives so that we can get more of what we want. Life is Sales is about how to be more influential in life, and for those in business, how to be more influential so you can increase your sales. There are 6 key principles covered in the book and some great reading on how to handle rejection, which we have all been through. And Connie, you can tell us all about that. Welcome to the show, Connie.
Thank you, Kate.
So tell me a little bit. Now, I know a little bit about you, Connie, and I've read the book, and I found it fascinating, and I told you before the show, wish I had had this and read this 5 years ago when I was starting my newspaper, and certainly was looking for help and focus in exactly that, sales. So tell me a bit about your writing the book.
So the book was co-authored with a colleague of mine, Gary Ford, and for years we worked at a title insurance company together, and on his whiteboard in his office he had this title, Life is Sales. And, you know, what we believe is that we all want to be more influential in life, and a lot of people have a negative connotation to the word sales.
Yes.
But yet, you know, we all do want to be more influential, right? You want to be able to influence your husband. You want to be able to influence your children, you know, your boss, the people that you're dealing with and negotiating with. So, you know, to get a job, to negotiate a better price on something. So, you know, we say that, you know, life is sales.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love how the beginning of the book, when Gary's actually speaking with regard to some of the best salespeople are the ones that you wouldn't even think about, and that is some of the best salespeople start out their children. There are manipulative children that don't even know what they're doing, and I found that absolutely fascinating. He started off talking about his granddaughter, Avery, and how she, you know, that's exactly how it begins. And if you could look at a child, how they get you to give them exactly what they want, and yet, as he went on discussing it, how somehow we lose that ability to pull in from other people getting exactly what we want. It might not be food at the time, but it's, you know, as it goes on. I found that fascinating.
Exactly. As we get older, we lose that, you know, is it courage or, well, it takes courage to begin to ask for what we want. And when we're children, we just ask for it.
Right.
You know, and
right.
I guess
well, there's not a lot of negativity, right? As a child, as a newborn, and as you're growing in a family, there's a lot of positive reinforcement. It's a constant positive reinforcement for children, and you're not used to, as you say, rejection as a child. You don't get rejected. I mean, most children don't. So you have all that positive. So you're always asking for something, and you're getting it. It's as adults that we start to lose that self-confidence, because then we are learning to be rejected. We are getting rejected throughout our growing up process once we've lost the cuteness of childhood.
Yeah, you know, think about the dating scene in junior high school, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, tell me, before we go right into the book, your focus is, of course, sales and teaching people how to, I said that word manipulate, and I don't think that that's the right word to use, but how to use people to use the tools that we have inside us, bring them out to get what you want out of life. But you have a whole lot more to you with regard to your, you're a woman with a career, you're a mom, you're a homemaker, a volunteer. So how do you even find time to even write about this, let alone live it?
Oh, man, I struggled. I struggled a lot with it, Kate. When I first sat down to start writing, and there were a lot of blocks, I had a sense of what I wanted to say, and I thought, I'll just sit down, just put a pen to paper in that time, pen to paper, and started writing and thought I had my first chapter complete, sent it off to Gary. He took a look at it. He said, uh-uh, this is not what we want. Throw it out, start again. I thought, no, you know, I think he's wrong. So I sent the chapter down to my sister in California and said, you know, what do you think? What do you think? You know, am I on track? And she says, oof, you know, way too philosophical.
Rejection right. After rejection.
Throw it out. So I had to go back to Gary and say, you know, like, what is it we want to create? You know, what's the vision that you've got for how this would unfold? And, we talked about how to organize the book and, that we want to include the research and our experiences from workshops that we'd led and experience from our personal lives and, that we want to include stories in the book and that it be done in a conversational tone so it's easy to read. And actually fitting it in, like, I struggled with the time. I felt guilty because I was taking time away from my family. I had to do my work, and then at night, you have dinner with your family, and then afterwards I'd go down to the basement and sit and start writing, but I felt really guilty, so I created it as a part-time job. Mm-hmm. I said to them, I said, I'm going to spend 2 hours a night, like five nights a week, and this is what I'm going to do. It's like a part-time job, and that started to work a lot better for me when I had, the little voice in my head said, it's okay, your family's giving you permission, and it's now a part-time job.
Now, did you, what was the first book that you've written was called what?
It's The Canadian Guide to Protecting Yourself from Identity Theft and Other Fraud.
Now, did you co-write that?
I was a contributing author in that book.
Okay. Yeah. So you got to do, so certainly not as much as Life is Sales. You put in a little bit with that. So you and Gary, basically, you collaborated on Life is Sales. Did you find, because now you're doing 50-50, I'm assuming, for the book, is it easier to collaborate with someone? Is there headbutting there, or do you?
There's headbutting. Yeah. Yes. I tell you, probably one of the lessons I learned and lived through, it took us about nine months to write the book.
Wow.
But, a lot of negotiating, a lot of disagreeing, and, what we really want to create are win-win situations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you've got to listen to what the other person wants, and sometimes you give in or you bend or you, we say agree or accept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it did take something. So I really learned a lot about negotiating as I wrote the book.
And, of course, that's a huge concept of your book.
Yes.
So while you're writing it, you're still learning the whole give and take of trying to sell your idea to Gary doing the same thing, and then you're putting this into the book. I mean, that's fascinating to me that while you're collaborating on a book about, handling rejection and dealing with getting, the end result of what you want, that's exactly how you're going to write something.
It is. You're right.
So from your experience and the two of you, putting all of this research into it over a year, what did you both come up with, from that? Why don't people get more of what they want? We all know, we all have an idea of what we want. It's getting to it.
Yeah, I'm not even convinced of that, Kate. Like, I'm not even convinced that people really know
what
they
want.
No, I think, in big, fluffy terms, we might know, and probably what we know more of is what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this. I don't want to be overweight, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first challenge, is actually knowing what you want and what you want to create. And once you've got that, you've got to start asking for it. You've got to get into conversation. You've got to start asking for what you want.
Okay.
But most people have this natural tendency to hint at what they want. So they don't outright ask. They just kind of hint. And we're very humble people, right? And we've grown humble because, as you know, teenagers, we started fearing rejection, right? We started to get afraid of the word no. Mm-hmm. And when we heard no two or three times, we started taking that rejection personally rather than just it was no to the request.
Right.
So that's, you know, I think that's the big secret. Know what you want and then ask for it.
Well, do you think, and I'll just tell you one thing, and I think it speaks to this, and that you touched on, we tend to be a little bit humble. I think that people tend to be a little bit vague. And I remember many years ago, about 12 years ago, I worked in an insurance company, and I absolutely hated it. I was doing my due diligence. I wanted to be an insurance adjuster. I wanted to be on the road. Number one reason was I hated a 9-to-5 job, and number two was the insurance adjusters were investigators, and they made a ridiculous amount of money, and that's what I wanted, and there were only men that did it, and a woman ran this particular program, and I finally got an interview after a year with her, and I went in, and I sat down, and she said to me, so why do you want this job? And I gave her what I thought she wanted to hear. Well, I think a woman would be great in this. It's something that I can do. I'm able to get a background investigations. I can do that. She goes, okay, so, but, like, why do you want this job? And again, I said, oh, well, you know, I always show up on time and da-da-da. She must have asked me, but why do you want this job? Why do you want it? And finally she said, oh, for God's sakes, Kate, you will make a lot of money. Do you want to make money? And I said, yes, that's really what I want. At the end of it all, I really don't care a lot about what it is or how to get there. I want to make the kind of money that I've heard you can make doing this. And she said, at last, it was like pulling teeth. What do you want? I want to make a lot of money. That's what she wanted me to say. But I think that it's very difficult for people, you know, if you say, what do you want? Well, I'd like to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now, what do you really want?
Exactly.
And is that what you find? Like, do people find it very difficult to really pinpoint and say it up front?
Yeah, they do. Exactly, Kate. They do. And especially around money, people are very humble about wanting to make money. You know, and people, you know, especially women, I hate to stereotype, but women are not traditionally strong negotiators when it comes to negotiating a discount on a major purchase, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shy away from it. Like, you know, what are we afraid of? So what? He says no. Are you prepared to pay the full price? Or, you know, are you willing, you know, give it a try. Ask for a reduction in price. You know, what is it about money that we're so afraid of? I don't know.
And would you suggest then, I mean, what are some, what would be some sort of, I don't know, practices that, you know, anyone could do in everyday life? Like, how can we practice? Give me some skill techniques to learn to ask for what we want.
So I'd say, you know, like, that's my favorite chapter in the book is called Making Powerful Requests.
Okay.
And so you have to know what you want, right? You have to be able to narrow it down to, you know, what is it that you want? And sometimes you might start with what you don't want. And then once you're clear on what you want, it's, you know, who do you need to influence in order to get what you need? And it becomes, before we're going to go into that space of asking that person for what we want to create a relationship with that person such that they need you like you need them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we talk about the principle of reciprocity in our book. I'll give you, you know, an everyday example. You go shopping at the department store, and you're about to go through a double door, and you arrive at the door at the same time as another shopper. And, you know, this person opens the door for you and gestures for you to go in. And then what do? You open the next door, and you gesture for them to go in.
Right.
So what you felt was a sense of obligation to repay, you know, the behavior that was first given to you. So that sense of obligation is, pardon me, what we want to create, but we want to create it sincerely, right? We want to genuinely be of service to somebody else so that they'll want to be of service to us.
Okay.
Okay, so reciprocity is kind of what sets the stage for being able to ask for what you want.
So that's the base. That's the beginning of the steps.
Yeah, that's the first. Well, the kind of the second step. Knowing what you want is first, and then you know, having to create the context to ask for it is where we go before. And you see reciprocity everywhere. Like you'll see it with volunteers and organizations. I remember being invited to be a lunch bag. My daughter Sarah was in public school at the time, and somebody said, Mrs. Bird, would you help us to serve the lunches and organize the lunches for these children? And we believe in serving nutritious lunches, and of course, yeah, I believe in that. And I saw a need for the service, but I had a full time job. I didn't have time to be a lunch bag, mm-hmm. and so I said no to her. But I felt guilty saying no because, I really believed in what she was doing and saying. Well, she knew what to do in that moment. She came back with a concession, and she said, well, if you can't do it every day, how about on a quarterly basis serving in our lunch, the hot dog lunches?
Yeah.
But in that I could do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, reciprocity, here she believes in stuff I believe in. I want to support what she's doing. She makes a request. I say no, and she comes back with a concession. And I, it was something I could say yes to, but it happens everywhere. There's some research that we did. A professor from the University of California in Santa Barbara started sending Christmas cards when Christmas season to just a random sampling of people across the country.
Okay.
And he had this avalanche of Christmas cards come back. Now, these were cards he'd sent to complete strangers, and yet people felt obligated to send cards back to him. What's funny, Gary was down in Phoenix doing a workshop for City Financial, and there was a woman in the workshop that he was sharing, the research in the workshop, and she says, you've just solved a mystery in my family. She says, we got a Christmas card from these people, the Harrisons, in Santa Barbara, and my husband didn't know who the Harrisons were, and my kids were too little. I just didn't know who they were. She says, and here you've solved it. She says, the first year I got a card, I thought, oh, it's just a mistake, and then the second year, she says, I got a card from them again, so I started sending them Christmas cards. And she says, we've been sending cards, 8 or 10 years now to each other.
Do they know who they are?
No.
That's funny. However, I can see doing that with Christmas cards. I tend to get the occasional bill that isn't mine, and I have yet to pay it. So I won't be doing that to reciprocate, but a card, yes.
Now, what does it mean, Kate, when you get a Christmas card really close to Christmas? What does that mean?
You mean it's too close to Christmas?
It's too close to Christmas. You've sent
your cards
out. And you don't
have time to send one back?
No, but you'd already sent your cards out. And perhaps you didn't get a card from that friend until right at Christmas. But it's the obligation that kicked in.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, now, what would you say is the most powerful lesson that you presented in this particular book that we should really be aware of? What's the meat of the book?
Geez, there's so many great lessons in this book. When I think about the opening chapters on qualities that we need, persistence, initiative, mm-hmm. assertiveness. I think about the chapter on rejection as you get later into the book, how many people internalize rejection, and there's a few lucky people that externalize rejection.
Okay, let's talk about that, because I think that is probably one of the stop gates for many people and for many businesses. And I told you a little bit before the show that when I first started the newspaper, I was going along and I had absolutely no background in sales whatsoever. And when I was out and about and I'd come back, and I remember my husband saying, so how did you do today? Did we get some ads? And I went, oh, yeah. Yeah, we did really well. We have 3 new ads. It's fantastic. And he said, great. So what did you charge on Let's Market? And I said, well, I didn't really charge anything because, they're just starting. Their business is brand new. They don't really have a sales budget. So I just said we'd do the ad, and then, we'll just see how it goes. And I remember him saying, but we're not philanthropic. Like we don't have our children in the basement, you know, churning out the newspaper every week. He said you can't do that. And, you know, and it took me a long time to be able to actually ask for the end result. And a lot of times people would still have the same answer that they had at the very beginning. No, I'm sorry, we don't have a budget for it.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. And I felt, I did internalize that. I felt it was me. It was, well, you don't like me.
Yes. And really they're saying, I don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were practicing reciprocity in that moment, Kate, when you said, oh, okay, you don't have the money. You know, I want your ad. I can hear that you believe in this and what I'm doing, and you want to support me, but you don't have the money, so I'm going to give it to you for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're setting the stage for reciprocity. You know, what you're afraid of is, you know, what were you afraid of?
Well, I think I will tell you the one thing. I don't like the uncomfortable feeling, and we've all had it where you go into certain furniture stores and you're literally hounded by the poor salesperson there who obviously is working on commission, and they literally won't leave you alone. And I hate that. Like, I absolutely hate it. I will say, when I am ready to do something, I will come and find you. Please don't follow me around, because all that will do is force me right out the front door again. And when I went out with a couple of salespeople, the way that they dealt with no from the client was that they didn't deal with no, that they would continually barrage them with, well, okay, I hear what you're saying. I understand that you don't have the budget. So, but you do understand, though, that, you know, you have to advertise, you blah, blah, and they wouldn't leave it alone. The first time someone tells me no, I would walk away. I would say, I get it, I understand, I leave. That's apparently not a really good salesperson.
Yeah, you're human, you know. We don't like to hear the word no. We fear rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the human condition.
So how do we, okay, let's say we're doing that. We've got something to sell. We believe in our product. We believe in ourselves. We are terrified that the client is going to say no. And we know that actually nobody ever has the budget, but somehow, some way, they'll find it if you can find a way for them to make it work. But how do we get to that point of convincing someone they've said no, now what?
Yeah, so, you know, often I think about the whole approach, you know, in terms of what we call the sales conversation, and there's a chapter in the book on that. But it's, you know, understanding what's important to that client or prospect for you, what's important to them, you know, what their situation is, what they believe in, what's worked, what hasn't worked for them. And coming from that position, you make your presentation that is a solution to a problem that they're experiencing. And, you know, you start taking a look at what are they saying no to. You know, is it no, I can't afford to give you $500 up front?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the next question then? You know, what could you afford? You know, so we're looking to explore what is it a no to. It's not a no to you personally, Kate. It's a no to perhaps the offer of, you know, the ad is $500. Right? Is that where you're going?
Yeah. So and so that would be in the business sense of so in a business we're going to try and do the
reciprocity. Yeah. So you come back and you would offer the ad for free.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, how do you leave it? So in essence, it's, you know, I'm giving you this gift.
Right. So now I need you to understand that that's exactly what it is, and now we're going to move forward, because what I'm going to give you is going to help build your business, and so the next time around, now you're going to, you know, help me keep building your business by, you know, paying for an ad or, you know, something in that regard.
Yeah, so my goal in giving you this ad for free this month is to show you that it will help drive some business to you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you receive that business, can I count on you to pay for the ad next month?
Right. Okay.
You know, so, and then to schedule your follow-up, right? Like, typically,
okay,
we forget to follow up.
mm-hmm.
as well. We've walked out the door and we go, whew, that was uncomfortable. Oh, okay, I'm going to put the ad in and keep my fingers crossed now. You know,
right.
We gotta follow up with them again.
Okay. Okay. Now that's wonderful on a business sense, and I get that. But this book isn't just about building a business per se, right? Because you talk about life is sales. So not only can we be productive in our business, but not everybody has a business. And so you also help people with your coaching and workshops and whatnot, basically deal about, you know, bringing influence and power into your life.
Yeah, like all of these principles apply, you know, and that's why we say, you know, life is sales. They apply to life and they apply to business as well. The foundational principles are the same. You know, I think back to a time when we moved into our new home in Ashburn. And, you know, moving day, all the boxes come in on Friday, and we had a big crew help us get into the house. And Saturday, we're unfolding and unpacking and cleaning, and the neighbor next door knocks on the door, Kathy, and I say, oh, you know, come on in, you know, happy to meet my first neighbor in this new neighborhood. And she says, no, she says, I'm not coming in. She says, but I want you to come over for tea this afternoon. She says, what time will you take a break? And then come over, meet my husband, Gord, and we can sit down. And so we said, oh, Kathy, you know, we'll be over at 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. You know, it was just, what a great break. It was something that we needed and no food in the house yet, right?
Yeah.
So it was a welcome offer. And when we went over to Kathy's house, and they gave us all these lessons. We moved to the country, so we'd left the suburbs, and we moved to the country, and we didn't know about well and septic systems and flies and spiders and all the animals and what had you. And we got a lesson on what it was like to live in the country from them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just so thankful for the time that they spent with us and the generosity in inviting us into their home. That, you know, I'm standing at the front door and, you know, we're about to start unpacking again and we got a lot of work to do. And out of my mouth comes, you know, Gordon, Kathy, you've got to come over to our house. Come over tomorrow afternoon and, you know, come have coffee with us. And my husband's looking at me like, are you crazy? Like, we got a lot of work to do here. But
yeah.
It was that sense of obligation that overcame me. Kathy created, you know, what she wanted. She wanted to have a good neighbor. So she was willing to take the initiative to take the first step, go knock on the door, you know, and offer something that she knew would be of value to people moving into a new home.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you actually have them over the next day?
No. She refused.
Good for her.
Yeah.
That's a great neighbor.
That was a great, yes.
Yeah.
Darn.
So she knew that you were doing it out of a sense of, you know, that you kind of had to reciprocate. But she was bright enough to know that was very good of you to do that, but you weren't prepared to reciprocate at that moment.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what she knew, but I guess I'm guessing that's right, Kate. Yeah.
Now, if it's actually so simple to use, if reciprocating is some, you know, it seems very basic, right? I hold the door for you, you hold the door for me. I invite you to my home, you invite me to your home. Seems very simple, but you say that it doesn't work all the time. Why?
Because we're afraid. You know, we're afraid of that rejection. We're afraid of that word no.
Mm-hmm.
That could be one of the reasons. But I would suggest that most people don't recognize the opportunities when they're in front of them. You know, and Kate, I hope it's all right to use you as an example with your paper.
Sure.
So thank you for being generous like this. But, you know, here you're giving somebody a gift of an ad. You know, and that's, you know, that's a costly gift.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, what's the next part? Like, how do I make this turn into business so that it's a win for me too, as well as a win for the business that I'm putting the ad in the paper for,
mm-hmm.
right? Typically, you know, we see there's an opportunity to help somebody. We want to be helpful, but then we don't look for that opportunity for them to help us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We don't know what to say in that moment. And so typically, you know, and I think of times when somebody has done you a favor, what would you say? You know, they've done you a big favor, Kate. Come over. They've helped you out. And you know, you just really appreciate all the work that they've done for you. How do you respond? What do you say when they say, thank you, Kate?
Well, when they say thank you so much, you know that, now you and I told you this because you'd asked me, there's something that I don't like to say, and I try very hard not to ever say, no problem.
Yes.
I know that because because when you do something, you know, it hasn't been a problem, but it's certainly been an effort. And when you say no problem, I personally think that diminishes what I've just done for you.
Absolutely.
And I don't want it to diminish. I want you, yes, to actually be grateful that I did it.
Yeah.
Because then it makes it worthwhile, the effort that I went to.
You've got it. And we say, you know, no problem is like a national disease.
Huge.
You know,
yeah.
You walk around, just imagine, you know, listen for how people respond to you when you say thank you. So many people will say no problem.
No problem.
And what does it really mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's incredible. No problem. I think about a poor young man that was serving at a restaurant, and I said, thank you, it was a lovely meal, and your service, your timing was great, really, really, you did a really nice job serving. And he said, oh, it was no problem. And I said, what do you mean it was no problem? You mean I'm not all that important? It took no effort on your part? What, I'm not all that special after all? Geez, I thought you were doing it because I was special. No problem. And he said, oh, that's not what I meant. I really meant, you know, thank you. It was really a pleasure serving you today, too. You know, something like that.
It would be nice if we could have people just take that those two words out of their vocabulary and just make sure, because, you know, I'm sure that waiter probably ran around like a crazy man if it was busy, and you see them. And if they've done an amazing job and kept everybody happy, It was an effort. It was a problem, so to speak, right? You were worth that effort. So I absolutely love the fact that you kind of kiboshed those two words.
Yeah, say what you really mean, right? Mm-hmm. Say what you really mean.
Yeah, I would love to see, Connie, now I haven't had the opportunity to speak with Gary, and I would love to do that. I see a huge opening here with this particular book, and the one place that I see it, I know that you do workshops for businesses, and I know that you talk to probably mostly, you know, adults and people who are looking how to, you know, get the end result with sales, and also, you know, in your own life, deal with rejection and whatnot. I really see a huge opening here for teens. I find that, I think that's probably one of the worst areas that teenagers have, is the absolute fear of rejection, and they don't know how to deal with it. And I believe that if you've dealt with it a lot as a teenager, I think that's why some people have a huge area of inability to deal with it as adults. We've all known the girls and guys who we went through high school and university with that just seemed to breeze through. Whether or not they actually did, I don't know. But there was a handful of people throughout my life that I've known that just seemed to breeze through, always get what they wanted, seemed to have this innate ability to just go through life and get exactly what they wanted out of it. And I think that those are the people that were brought up in such a way that they were told over and over, you're amazing, you're terrific, you can get what you want. The majority.
I think what you're on to, Kate, like, I'm not sure that we teach our children how to handle rejection.
Okay.
You know, I think at the times that my son has been disappointed with a result, I think in the book we wrote about a time when Ryan was trying out for a basketball team and didn't make the team. Mm-hmm. And it was a series of cuts. You know, he made the first round, he made the second round, you know, and eventually got cut from the team. But in terms of, you know, how do we typically, you know, parent our children to help them with that rejection? It's not something I can consciously say, I'm going to teach my kids how to handle rejection. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, possibly it's a parenting skill we've got to develop as well, but typically what happens is we internalize, right? We say, oh, I must have done something wrong or bad, or I wasn't good enough. You know, know, that little voice in our head takes over and, oh, poor me, rather than saying, you know, maybe the teacher didn't see my potential.
Right.
Yeah, and I remember one year Ryan went back and challenged the teacher and said, you know, I think I got cut from the hockey team too soon. I'm just coming off a sickness, and would you give me another chance? You know, he got another chance. He was glad that he just didn't take the no, but that he went back and he tried again. You know, he didn't make the team, but he gave it his all this time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how we internalize that rejection is huge in our lives. What we say to ourselves is huge.
And I think, too, I'm noticing that when your child has come to you, and I've done this many times because you're busy, right? We're busy people. And especially when children come to you on a continual basis of things, right? You know, I'll get, oh, so-and-so was mean to me today, and so-and-so wouldn't let me play in their group, and so-and-so, you know, said something nasty. And I'm kind of, yeah, well, you know what, just stay away from that person. Or, you know, we trivialize what they're telling us, wherein I think maybe if you open yourself up and really have a look at this book, you can give them some guidelines. And don't trivialize it. Don't say, oh, we'll just walk away and don't play. Maybe go back in there and ask in a different way, you know, or make it something that will benefit them. Reciprocity.
Yeah, I'm thinking of my coaching skills now. Instead of providing an answer to the child, we always empathize, of course, with our children. You know, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's too bad. You know, it should be more of an explorer with them, you know, to ask them some questions, to find out what's going on inside of their head and what they're saying to themselves, you know, and perhaps as a chance to vent and help them to explore, you know, are there any other possibilities, you know, that they can come up with and solve their own problems rather than just, you know, I think of, you know, Kate, you know, I'm learning more by having this conversation with you today. You know, I'm so sorry to hear that. Oh, I wish it had turned out better. You know, I could see myself saying that rather than going into that explore and inquire with that child.
Yeah, I think we've all done it, and turning it around so that they can take, you know, some of these skills that if someone does, you know, read the book, go through it, you're going to learn a lot. And then this is something I would absolutely turn around and say, you know, to my 13-year-old, well, you know, when the girls, you ask them if you could, you know, go over to their place, they were all going over and they were all going to sit around and watch a show, and you said, oh, can I come too? And they kind of went, oh, well, you know, not this time, I'm only allowed to have so many girls over. Don't take it personally. Say, okay, that's great. Listen, tomorrow you're all invited back to my place, and you know, I know my mom won't care, and I won't. You're all invited back. There we go, right? And they're probably going to go, hey, that was pretty cool. You know, she didn't seem to mind. She understood that I can only have so many friends over. The next day we'll go over. That's probably, you know, there's a way of doing it instead of her coming back whining to me saying, well, they were all going over and I wasn't invited. Well, then just invite them over then, right? Like I haven't just come up with this. I got this from looking at the book going, that would make so much more sense to get this started earlier.
Yeah, what is it you want in this moment? You know, I want to be with the girls. Okay, so, you know, this opportunity's not there. When could there be another opportunity? Yeah, great.
I think you should be doing workshops for teens.
I love the idea.
Yeah, I think you should. So tell me something. Why do people hint about things? Like, what is that all about?
Yeah, we hint because we're afraid of that rejection, Kate, right? We're afraid. We're afraid of that word no. We're afraid to be rejected. And if we keep getting rejected, we're just going to stop doing it. You know, we just get beaten into conformity eventually. I hate it. But it's, you know, it's no to the offer. It's not no to Kate, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of like tippy-toeing through life to me, though. I don't know that I've, other than sales, because I don't like to bug people or barrage them with, you know, buy this. However, I told you I'm much, much better at it now. I certainly don't take anything personally. I really don't anymore because I usually go in there with the belief, but it's taken years, that I have a really great product, and, you know, I want to share it with you. It's just like having the amazing people that I've met come on and talk on the show. It's because I really believe that there's something there that somebody is going to get and go, oh, that makes so much sense. So tippy-toeing through life, you know, I don't think that you can do that. If you do, you're just going to come out with so little.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about in your paper and, you know, how do we get more people? And I think I'm going to speculate you've done a lot of cold calling.
Oh, yeah.
In your day. And at this point, you know, your paper has become more mature and you've got, you know, quite a number of people advertising with you now. And I'd be looking for referrals from your happy clients now.
Yeah.
So that would be a lot easier.
That's a good idea.
So you're getting a testimonial from an existing client who's had some success advertising with you. You know, so you're checking for satisfaction. They're running the ad again, and you're asking them, you know, who do you know in your circle of friends or your business associates that would also benefit from this kind of an opportunity?
Oh, and that's another whole step, because now not only are you saying to your client, I'm glad that you're happy with me, I'm happy with you, we're benefiting one another. So now I'm going to ask for a little bit more from that person. Now I'm going to say, what else can you perhaps supply me with that I can go and say what a wonderful client you are? So again, reciprocating again. And now perhaps I can offer someone that you know what I've been giving you.
Yeah.
So you're asking for a little bit more all the time.
Yeah, and I think about a relationship. When I was in sales, I had a lawyer client, Brian, that was my client, and, you know, I brought a customer to him. And in bringing the client to him, you know, he thanked me for the client, but I could see there was a little bit of reluctance. And afterwards, he says, you know, why did you bring that client to me? And I said, because you've got a great reputation. You know, he was a big supporter of my company at the time. And, you know, if his business does well, then I do well in my business. So here's an opportunity to introduce a client, gets his services, ends up with my product as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
You know, eventually, he came around, and what ended up happening was we began this relationship of reciprocating. So, you know, I had an opportunity to find a number of clients that I could provide to him in his business, and one day it was like, you know, thank you so very much, Connor. Really appreciate, you know, what can I do to repay you?
Mm-hmm. And he said, no problem.
He didn't. No, and I said, you know, I'd like to work with other lawyers. You know, who could you introduce me to in the community that could benefit from the services that I provide, like I provide to you? And he says, well, I don't want you providing customers to them, he says, but, you know, let me introduce you to Mark. You know, and it was a lot easier to meet Mark because Brian gave me the recommendation and even actually set up a lunch for us to get together.
Right.
So it really made it much easier. So my you know, my credibility factor is Brian is sitting at the table introducing me to Mark is you know, really great. Yeah.
So you get a foot in the door because you already have both feet in the door with one, and then they kind of, you know, help you to get the foot in the door with another area because of the give and take.
Yeah, and eventually you lose score, right? Mm-hmm. You lose score, and it's like, you know, I want his business to succeed. He wants me to succeed in my business, and, you know, the reciprocity, the opportunities go back and forth now, and we don't keep track of who owes who anymore, right?
Right.
You just, you know, when it's there, I can't help but think of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right, and you get lunch.
Yeah.
Lunch is good. Who, tell me, and I personally feel that the book actually appeals to everybody. I don't know that anyone could possibly read Life is Sales and not take something away, but who do you think that the book appeals to?
You know, it's written in a conversational tone, so, mm-hmm. so actually we've heard a lot of people read it. Typically, what's funny is the statistics say that salespeople, 80% of salespeople never read a book. I think salespeople are much more face-to-face, so they'd rather go to a workshop. But, you know, the book appeals to everybody, all walks of life. You know, anybody that wants to be more influential and learn how to position things so that they get what they want, and it's not at the expense of somebody else, but it's you know, it's a mutual win.
Now, and that's very interesting that you say that 80% of salespeople don't want to read the book. So I'm going to assume, though, that most of your workshops are full of salespeople. So are you basically taking the book and this is what your workshop is based around? You can say, okay, if you're not going to read this, just you're going to listen to this and get what we're saying.
Yeah, our workshops, we call them edutainment. There's education. Edutainment. It's education and entertainment.
Okay.
And they're very interactive. So, you know, we can talk about one of the principles and share with you some of the research and the stories from our own experience, but you need to practice it in your own life. You know, what would you say? You know, how do you ask for a referral?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you say? You know, most people, if maybe, perhaps, someday, if you might know somebody, I sure hope you'll give them my business card. You know, and what's that going to get? Business card's going to get left in a pocket or thrown in the trash.
Yeah.
So, you know, people that want to build their businesses, ask for referrals, ask for additional business, are typically the people that are there. And Kate, I tell you, now that I'm spending a lot of my time coaching, I wish we saw a lot more of the bosses coming in, the person that's coaching the salesperson, to come to the workshop, because if we want people to change their behavior, we have to give them positive reinforcement. We have to give them the reinforcement to change.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the boss should be learning this stuff right along with the salesperson.
Absolutely.
It could be a retail operator. It could be a small business person. A lot of the workshops we do, we're typically hired by corporations to come in and do a sales team. Or a combination of a couple of companies get together to bring their people together. And it could be companies that support each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lawyers coming in to work with a title insurance company, realtors that work with a mortgage broker, you know, pairing like that.
Okay. I like that. Okay, now I do want to touch a little bit on what you call the liking principle. Explain a bit about that.
Yeah, so the liking principle, I guess, you know, we all have similar products and
mm-hmm.
services that are available to us. And, you know, people typically like to deal with people they like. If the offer is the same, I'm going to deal with you, Kate, because I like you. And even at times when the offer's not quite the same, I still want to deal with you because I like you. So the liking principle is a huge, huge tool that we can't forget to use.
Right.
As we try to influence people.
Now, has that got a lot to do with, you know, I don't like to use the word hate either. I'm trying to take all negative words out of my vocabulary. But you know how people say that, you know, that first impression, you only get to make that one first impression. And that is very disconcerting to me, because sometimes I've often waited until I've met someone the second or third time before I make my review or decision. The first time can be very unsettling for a lot of people, and they might not actually be totally themselves. So do you feel that first, you know, how fast do we form an impression?
You know,
is it really that right away?
Statistics say, you know, between 6 and 15 seconds we form a first impression. We draw a conclusion about a person we've met.
Wow.
You know, and it's visual, you know, it's all your senses working here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what typically happens is you draw a conclusion about that person, and then you spend the rest of the time interacting with them looking to prove yourself right, you know.
Yeah. Or wrong. If you made that first impression and you go, I'm not sure about this person at all. I've done that. I've met people where I form an immediate first impression and think that's never really going to work. And then I meet them months later and talk again and think, I wonder why I didn't click with this person right away. I'm clicking now.
Yeah, it could be the environment. Yeah, the environment that you're in, the context that you were meeting that person in for the first time.
Yeah.
Could be their appearance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, appearance does matter.
Yeah.
There's a study in the book where we talk about a fellow that's standing at, in the middle of a busy street wanting to cross, and, there's others, you can see, that want to cross, too, and he's dressed in jeans and a T-shirt, and he bolts across the street with the cars, and, a couple of people follow him. And they do the study again a bit later, and they put a man in a business suit with a briefcase at the side of this busy street. And lo and behold, a whole lot more people followed him across the street than the guy in the T-shirt and jeans.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say?
Well, it's huge. Right. That, I mean, and I do understand that. They do, I know that many surveys have been done about what you find is attractive and not attractive. And it's quite amazing to me, what people will actually see right away that isn't really there. A large fat person, they'll say, oh, that one doesn't have quite a great personality. And this is just looking at people, right? Different body types, different hair color, different eye color. It's quite amazing how we have this idea of someone immediately before they've even opened their mouth.
Well, I want to know, Kate, do blondes really have more fun?
Oh, way more fun.
Yeah.
Way more fun. I don't know. I've never been a blonde in my life. Only my hairdresser knows. But you know that too, Connie.
Yeah.
You know what, though? If I tell a redhead that blondes have more fun, like your daughter Sarah, she just goes, you don't know what you're talking about. Redhead all
redhead.
The way.
Yeah.
As she puts on her high heels and gets on a motorcycle. What a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, I think it would be absolutely fascinating. I absolutely want to attend a workshop. I think I would love to be edutained by both you and Gary. And I think that a lot of people, either if you are in a business and you have staff, this would be an amazing thing to get in touch with you to find out what you've got coming up. What's the website we can go to, Connie?
It's www.lifeissales.ca,
mm-hmm.
right after the book.
Okay.
So the book's also available on the website.
Okay.
And Gary will get it updated with the public workshops that are coming up. And if you're looking for a private workshop, drop an email to Life is Sales as well. The information will be on the site. And there's a number of the workshops that we do that you'll find descriptions there as well.
Perfect.
Something else that a lot of our clients like are the monthly sales tips. So if you want to get set up on a monthly email, and it's a little sales tip that comes out each month, it just gives you something to think about. Drop us a note at Life is Sales, and we'll get you set up.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, we can also get the first book, which was, tell us again what the first book is about.
The Canadian Guide to Protecting Yourself from Identity Theft and Other Fraud is also available on that site, and Life is Sales. Yeah.
That's great. Okay, so we can get free monthly sales tip. You can go to the website at www.lifeissales.ca, learn all about the workshops. This great book, Life is Sales, is absolutely fantastic. And I still think that you and Gary should start maybe heading out to schools and doing talks there, because I really think that this is a huge reinforcement for the teens. I really do. I think you've got something here that can carry right over, not just for our everyday life, not just for businesses, but I think there's a lot in here that would certainly help, promote kids, going into their life, regardless of whether they're going to have their own business or work for someone. I think you've got a super book here, Connie. I really enjoyed
it. Thank you, Kate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us, and I hope that you'll be on again, and I will certainly hope to have Gary and you on. That would be absolutely hilarious.
Great.
So
thank you very much.
I would love to have two of them. So take care, Connie. Thanks so much.
All right. Goodbye, Kate.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you, everyone. Please, I hope you'll join us next week on Get Focused Radio. My guest will be Nicholas Boothman, and he's been called the Dale Carnegie for a rushed era, according to the New York Times. The Economist magazine's Matthew Bishop calls him truly inspirational. His upcoming American Public Television presentation, We Own the Years Ahead, shows how to live longer by generating energy from people, passion, purpose, and projects. He's a fascinating man, so please join us next week. I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Get Focused Radio. We have some exciting news. Our show has been picked up by WBLQ 1230 AM radio that will be broadcast out of New York, Seattle, and Connecticut. I'm really excited about this transition. I hope you're going to follow me over there, and it should take place sometime in October. There'll be more information coming up on the website at www.getfocusedradio.com. So please go over there, have a look, see who else is coming up, and like us on Facebook if you get a chance. On behalf of my guest, Connie Bird, and myself, Kate Hennessy, I would love to wish you an amazing day. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next week. Thanks again to Connie. Make sure to go to her website at www.lifeissales.ca. Life is beautiful.